second form is that of reminding a person. So, if an individual off the bat doesn't know what is right and what is wrong, doesn't know that he needs to do something or not do something, then you don't go and remind them. Obviously, you need to teach them. But if someone does know, then it isn't necessary for you to reteach them. Rather, a simple reminder will suffice. But this itself has a number of different cases, and this is where we struggle as well as a Muslim community. So, the first form or case is that you, for whatever reason, find out of a fault of another, someone is performing a sin, but he's performing the sin privately, and this person, if they found out that you knew about their fault and sin, they would feel embarrassed. So do we all understand the scenario? Someone is performing a sin, you find out, however, they're doing it privately, and they'll feel embarrassed knowing that another person knows of their sin. What does one have to do here? First, you're still responsible towards enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. But how do you go about doing that? You must remind and enjoin this person in a fashion that not only is extremely indirect, but also the person shouldn't find out that you know. So if you see someone, if you see me doing something wrong privately, and you'll know that I'll feel embarrassed if you come in, if I find out that you know. So you shouldn't come and tell me that, you know, so-and-so, I saw you doing something wrong. It's not right, don't do it. Because again, you might have enjoined the good and forbidden the evil for me, but what happened here? I still feel embarrassed. Because I found out that now you know. And every time I see you from that point on, this is going to stick with me, the sense of embarrassment. So you have to be extremely careful. Now what happens in most cases, in a lot of cases here? We find out of someone doing something wrong privately, the first thing we do is go tell another. Which itself is a grand sin. For you to embarrass another mu'min is a sin. And for you to tell the fault of another mu'min to another person is a grand sin. So, sometimes someone, out of the fact that they want to perform their Islamic responsibilities of enjoining the good and forbidding the evil, instead of doing something good, they perform two sins. That individual is only performing one. You, as the good guy, you're doing two. How? First, you're telling another, which is a grand sin, kabira, and also you're embarrassing him. So that's two sins. So you're worse than him. This is a big problem that we have. This gossip, this backbiting, these social ills that we have in our communities is because of these things. Some of us even take the extra effort to find out the faults of people. And our goals are not obviously to help them. Rather, it hurts to say this. It really does. That some in the community not only learn the faults of others, like to hear the faults of others, but they spread others' faults. Why? To make themselves look good. To make their families and their children look good. This is a sign of a disease. This is a cancer. You need to see a spiritual doctor. That you're so weak that for you to look good, you need to make another Muslim look bad. I've seen this with my own eyes. I've heard it with my own ears, and I'm sure all of you have. That they come and tell you something that is completely unnecessary. Did you hear so-and-so's son was seen downtown, or in downtown Pittsburgh, with another girl? My son has never, for example, spent time with an individual that's not mahram to them. So not only is he destroying the image, but he's also trying to make himself look good. Did you hear so-and-so's son was seen, for example, smoking? This is a problem. This is an ill that we have. So, what must we do? We must enjoin the good and forbid the evil in a sense that the person doesn't feel embarrassed. Even they say, to go as far as saying, you're not even allowed to tell their parents. If you find out of a fault of a young individual, most times, the first thing that we do, because we feel responsible towards them, is say, oh, the parents, the poor parents. So the first thing you go tell the parents, I saw your son doing something wrong. The first thing the parents are going to do is, first, the parents are going to feel embarrassed in the eyes of the other person, so one sin. Then the son finds out, the daughter finds out, the child finds out, so they feel embarrassed, two sins. And then that will most likely, if the parents are not, you know, prepared and don't have proper Islamic training, what will happen? That'll turn into some sort of conflict. And we said again, sometimes people will skip stages and quickly get towards physical confrontations. You made me look bad in front of so-and-so. And then he continues to either say bad things or physically hit them or whatever. So they say you don't go straight to the parents. What do? You enjoin the good and forbid the evil yourself in the sense that you don't embarrass them. Now, yes, there are exceptions. If you see that this person is insisting on the sin, and you personally cannot stop them from performing, in this case you are allowed to then let another individual know that you know that person can now help in helping and enjoining the good and forbidding the evil and helping this person stop what they're doing. Not any person. Not to say I can't do it, so then I'll go tell 10 people and probably from 10 of them someone can help me. No. You have to identify the person who can help you here and can have an effect on them, even if it's slow and steady, and then you share with them. Now, if this is the parents, if the individual that you've come to understand that can help the children, and you know they won't make a mess of it, then yes, you go tell the parents, and that's it. But if you know that it's not going to help the situation, then you need to find a way to solve the problem. The point here is to solve the problem. The point is here is not to just take it off your shoulders and throw it on that of the parents. Islam is not a religion of just, you know, tossing things. Islam is not, it's not about playing hot potato. That, oh, it falls in your hand, so you have to find someone else to throw it in their hand. No. You're responsible towards making sure that this actually gets done. So that's the first case. You find out of a sin someone is committing privately, and they'll feel embarrassed. The next case is what? You find out a sin individual is committing in private, again, but in this case, the person you know won't feel embarrassed if they know that you know. So, do we have a different responsibility? No, again, the responsibility is the same. It's wajib, mandatory, for us to still enjoin the good and forbid the evil. But it doesn't have to be in the same form. There are small differences. One, since you know the person won't feel embarrassed for them to know that you know, it's okay to put it at means with them. You can let them know, for example, brother, sister, I know this is, for example, a problem you're having, a difficulty that occurs in your life, and you try to enjoin the good and forbid the evil with them. Now, sometimes you say this person won't get upset if they know that they're committing a sin. So what do? In front of other people, you start saying, Ali, I saw you drinking the other time, don't drink anymore, in front of 5-6 other people that didn't know. Again, he may not feel embarrassed that you know, but you're making him look bad in front of other people. Again, sin. So, you have to, again, help him and treat him in a way that you don't degrade his status. You don't tell and share it in public. You tell him in private, you help him in private, and you offer your assistance out of sincerity. For you never know. As human beings, we all make mistakes. Yes, someone might be committing a sin in private, and they might not feel embarrassed about it right now, but we know that a lot of times people are going through different stages in their life. Maybe he doesn't feel the importance right now, but 5-6 years later, he might have a change in his life. And you don't want to have already all of this, you know, all of this, these bad habits that this man used to have in the public and in the eyes of everyone. So that in the sense that now he wants to become a better person, he really has no dignity in the eyes of the community. If now he comes out, he says, oh, this is the same guy that would drink and sleep around and would go clubbing and would do this and do this and do that. Now he wants to be active in the community? Of course not. He's a bad person. So this is, again, is a problem if it's not treated properly. The last case, if you come to understand of an individual's problem, a sin they're committing, but this person has no shame, in the sense that not only do they not care if you know, but rather they perform it in public. So the person is not committing something privately. Publicly and in front of everybody, they perform this sin. Now, again, our responsibility, same as before. You are still responsible towards enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. Don't say that, oh, this person has no shame. He does it in front of everybody. So he's probably chosen that as a way of life for himself. And I shouldn't have anything to do with them. Again, we see this a lot in our communities. This person has distanced himself from Islam. He openly drinks, he openly smokes, he openly, for example, goes to clubs and has relationships with people he's not supposed to. He openly uses foul language. He's openly disrespectful towards other people. So I shouldn't have anything to do with him. No, Islam says, yes, you're responsible. As his brother, which we've been establishing, just like as if your brother was to have this problem in their life, this hardship in their life, you turn your back on your blood brothers just because he's performing something wrong, doing something wrong, and in public, without shame? No. You still feel that you're responsible. Why? Because his dignity is your dignity. As a blood brother, the dignity of your brother is your dignity. In the sense that if your brother is a successful person, it makes you look good. If your brother is a failure, it makes you look bad, right? A lot of times we see this. When a member of the family, for example, is not on par with the other members, what do they try to do sometimes? They try to distance themselves from him. They try to disassociate themselves from him. Because if people find out of who they are and what they're doing, it'll make them look bad. So, we don't abandon them. We still are responsible towards helping them. But how do we do this here? Again, since he does it in public, it isn't necessary to keep it hush-hush. But this also doesn't mean that you should get a microphone and a loudspeaker and start announcing it to people who don't know. For example, someone in let's say the Washington area is doing something wrong, and then now this person, for whatever reason, feels responsible towards telling everyone in America. He comes to Pittsburgh and says, oh, people of Pittsburgh, almost the men of Pittsburgh, please note that such an individual in Washington is a bad person. So if you ever go to Washington, make sure you stay away from him. So we shouldn't be doing things like that. Whether in this channel, which is so rare and blunt, no one really does that unless they have something wrong, or whether through gossip. Sometimes we even hear it. Sometimes people want to share information with you that has nothing to do with you. Yeah, there's a family in California. Oh my God. Their child is so misguided. He's so bad. What does that have to do with me here in Pittsburgh? Why are you telling me this? Again, notice the goals that the person has in mind. Yeah, so-and-so is like this, but we're not. So my son and my daughter is good. So look at how prestigious they're trying to make themselves look. So these are the different forms that we must enjoin the good and forbid the evil. And so long as we don't pay attention to how this must be done, know that we will continue in our failures as a Muslim community. As we are right now, we are failing in the notion of saving face and respecting other people. Is gossip and backbiting not a big problem that exists in the Muslim community? Both in Islamic countries and both here. Same thing. For some reason, we like to bring the lower points and the bad points of our culture with us everywhere we go. God knows why. Maybe it's so influential in our lives that that point itself defines who we are. This is a problem. So far we've looked at, we've defined this responsibility. We've looked at the stages that one must go about performing this. Again, in each of these cases, for example, in the last case, again, each of these stages needs to be performed in order. If someone is performing something in public and doesn't care, you automatically don't go towards telling him off. Rather, again, the first, remember, in the heart, it needs to be heartfelt, and then by words. Again, that needs to be first with soft words, with kind words. And then if you see it's not effective, then you are permissive. It is permissible towards using a little more harsher tone. And then if it really comes to that point, to use, you know, a level of physical enjoying the good of forbidding the evil that it is permissible to do, which we'll inshallah get into tomorrow. Again, just because someone doesn't listen to your harsher words, it gives you the right to, you know, imprison them. No. There are conditions, and inshallah tomorrow, we'll get into what are the conditions that makes enjoining the good and forbidding the evil wajib and obligatory. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. I know we're short on time, so inshallah if we can dim the lights, we'll begin the salat. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum la hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-aliyyum. العظيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. Everybody, عليكم مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعل الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. السلام على الحسين وعلى ولدك علي الأصغر الذي فجعت به. On the day of Ashura, when it comes time that one by one the companions of the Holy Imam request permission and enter into battle, one by one the Holy Imam sees his companions fall and become martyred, to the point that he sees next to the camp of the Ahl Bayt the bodies of his sons and his companions lay there. The body of Ali al-Akbar lays piece by piece. The body of Qasim and Habib and Muslim lay on the ground. Imam Hussein is now fearful and is saddened by the fact that all of the women and children have been thirsty. Umm Kulthum exits the tent holding Ali al-Akbar in her hands. She says, Ya Hussein, this child has not drank in water for 3 days. This child is dying of thirst. Ya Hussein, get some water for this child. Ali al-Asghar was only 6 months old, a small child, taken to the battlefield in the land of Karbala, a six-month-old child. Think of your children, to have to take your children to the battlefield. The Imam takes Ali al-Asghar with him. He proceeds to go to the battlefield in front of the enemies of Islam. He says to them, Ya Qawm, إن لم ترحموني فارحموا حاض الطفل أما ترونه كيف يتلظى عطشا. He says, O enemies of Islam, O enemies of the Holy Prophet, if you do not have mercy on me and my companions, at least have mercy on this six-month-old child. What has this child done to hurt you? What has this child done for him to deserve this? And the Imam, as he was holding Ali al-Asghar towards the enemies, he said, look at the lips of this young child, that out of thirst, Ali al-Asghar would open and close his lips. They say when a child is extremely thirsty, he begins to constantly open and close the lips to show his thirst. Ali al-Asghar was so thirsty, he was dying of thirst. As the Imam was making this request from these enemies, Umar al-Sadr, may Allah curse him, tells Harmala to then shoot an arrow towards the Holy Imam and the child. As the Imam is telling his enemies to have mercy on this child, he feels the child move in his hands, and he sees that blood begins to drip from the body of Ali al-Asghar. فَذُبِحَ الطِّفْلُ مِنَ الْوَرِيدِ إِلَى الْوَرِيدِ أَوْ مِنَ الْأُذُنِ إِلَى الْأُذُنِ. The Imam then looked at the body of Ali al-Asghar. He saw that the came in the throat, in the sense that it had severed and cut from one ear to the other ear of Ali al-Hassan. The man then began to cry. From the sides came, Ya Hussein, do not be saddened for Ali al-Asqar, for the Holy Prophet will be there to give him a drink in which he will never become thirsty. But Hussein was saddened by the death of this poor child. As he came back to the camp and the tents of his companions, Sakina was there to embrace the Imam. He said, Ya Abatu, la'allaka saqayt akhil ma. Oh my father, oh Hussein, it looks like Ali al-Asghar has gotten some water the way you hold him. Hussein then began to cry. He said, Bunayya, haki akhak madbuhan bi sahm al-a'da. No, Sakina, they did not give water to this poor child. Rather, they struck him with an arrow that cut his throat, and the blood came gushing. And he has become martyred. Wa Aliya, 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 Wa Aliya. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم نسألك وندعوك باسمك العظيم العظم العز الأجل الأكرام. إلهي بحق فاطمة وأبيها وبعدها وبنيها والسر المستودع فيها وبدماء شهدائنا وإمام زماننا. يا الله 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 يا رحمن يا رحيم يا مقلب القلوب ثبت قلوبنا على دينك. ربنا يا وطنا يا قاضي الحاجات ويا كافي المهمات انك مجيب الدعوات انك على كل شيء قدير. اللهم عجل لوليك الفرج. اللهم عجل لوليك الفرج. اللهم عجل لوليك الفرج والعافية والناس. واجعلنا من خير انصاره واعوانه والمستشهدين بين يديه والمن علينا برضا. وصلى الله على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم صلوات. Oh!